she's got everything she needs. She's an artist, she don't look back. She's got everything she needs. She's an artist, she don't look back. She can take the dark out of the nighttime and paint the daytime black.
This is Peter V. We're doing a series of interviews with local artists that we call The Artist Speaks. In the studio today is Paul Imholt. Known as the String Man, Paul sings and plays a dozen traditional instruments. He performs at festivals, schools, and concerts across the United States. For the last 10 years, Paul has been composing and recording instrumental music for the Hammered Dulcimer and songs about life in the Midwest. Here's a sample from his latest album, Barn Raising Day. Pleasure to have you in the studio today, Paul. Let's jump right into this. So how long have you been performing music?
I've been doing this a very long time. As we were talking about recordings that you maybe have queued up, they were recorded about 20 years ago, not quite, but so. Almost my whole career, my whole life has been a professional musician. I've taken sabbaticals from music where I've taught for 2 years, and in that process still, I did gigs and performed, and sometimes my music was, I did a program with seniors, for seniors with disabilities, and music was such a huge part of that, that it just fell into almost an everyday occurrence. I would sing songs. But the majority of my livelihood, since I've been out of college, has been making music.
When did you actually make the decision to become an artist?
That's a real good question. You know, I've been playing professionally probably since I've been 12 years old. So, played dance bands, playing wedding receptions with a family band. My older brother started it, but I think I started playing music before he started playing music, or started practicing on the violin and on the guitar. But it was his idea. I have to credit him. He said, let's start playing. And the first gig, I got $9 for playing, which back in the probably late 60s, early 70s, it was $9 was $9. So, and actually, since about the mid-90s, pay has not really gone up for most musicians locally. So you just have to work a little harder, but that's okay.
Tell me a little bit about what it's like to be a professional musician.
You know, there's a business end of music, which you have to be conscious of. And if you didn't really love making music, I don't know if there would be any reason to do it, because it's not terribly weird, but it's a little weird. I'm gone most weekends when family events go on, but I'm compensated that when my children were young, I was able to be home and be kind of a house parent while my wife is out working. And so we were kind of double teaming the family, and then I would take off on weekends and we've made that work, and it has worked out.
I read that your musical career started quite early. How did that come about?
You know, it was my mother's father. So my grandfather was a fiddle player, and he played barn dances, and all his children accompanied him. So my mother was a piano player, and we always had music at the house. So somewhere along the line, my older brother was not interested in playing the fiddle. So I jumped in and said, I'd like to learn how to play that. Also, the influence of westerns on TV and the singing cowboy. And so, I've always wanted to play guitar.
Was that Gene Autry?
It was Gene Autry. It was Roy Rogers. Those are the two. And it was probably Roy Rogers first. And then Gene Autry, I think, was actually a little older. So, you'd get up on Saturday morning and watch westerns, and growing up on a farm, you know, we had ponies, but I never really, you know, rode very little, really. The actual work of caring for animals. I have great appreciation for people that care for livestock, but that's not necessarily a skill that I inherited or acquired.
I know that you like to collaborate with other musicians. Tell me a little bit about that.
You know, I've been fortunate that there are about three groups that I've, in the last about 3 years, there's a band that I've been in since I've moved back to St. Cloud, Ring of Kerry, which we do some pretty large concerts in town, and then we travel, and that we play Celtic music, Irish and Scottish, mostly traditional, but also contemporary writers of music. And my role is I've been referred to as a salt and pepper person, that I spice the music if I'm playing dulcimer or mandolin, or sometimes I used to play viola, but I haven't brought that along. But I do play like the second fiddle part, or sometimes harmony fiddle part, and cello, which I got into cello playing when one of my sabbaticals of teaching. I got to teach orchestra at Talahi School for about 6 months, which I really don't have training for. And so I took a couple cello lessons. I played violin and viola before that. And the school district needed a teacher. And so I applied and received the job and thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a lot of work, you know, actually. And I wasn't only working a couple days a week. But I got to take a couple cello lessons, too, to prepare myself, and fell in love with the instrument.
Well, I think it's time to take another listen to your music. Let's listen to a track called Running Water from your 1998 release, Red Wing. That's a beautiful song. So what is the new instrument we hear on that?
Well, the new instrument was the lead instrument, the mandolin. That mandolin was made by a builder in Duluth. I had went over to his house to look at guitars, and I didn't really like his, you know, guitars, and this is pretty technical. He had a zero fret, kind of a technical term, a fret before the first normal fret, and I've never really liked that on a guitar. And it was a classical guitar, and I was looking for a nice classical, and I thought that was really odd. But then he said, oh, I also have these mandolins and banjos I make. And I look, I, And I played his mandolin. I thought, ooh, I played this mandolin that you heard. And it was, I really enjoyed it. Really, and so I purchased that mandolin, brought it home, and probably, you know, recorded. You know, this is this Running Water, the title actually came, this is the second place I used it. I worked with a storyteller, and she had a story about putting a well under her farm, and I composed this little tune called Running Water to complement her story. It wasn't used in her story. It was kind of a fill between her stories, though in some places I played music behind her stories, but this was just this little piece, and I don't know. It wasn't this recording of it, but it was a very similar recording. I don't know. This might have been a little bit longer. So that's where the title and the And I thought the mandolin gave a feel of the water running and sparkling. And so that's the notion that came in the creative process.
It's fascinating to me how you take the idea of running water and turn it into a song with no words. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
When I'm playing, there's a feeling that the music is giving me, but I can't always put words to that feeling, but I try to put that it's combining the feeling of the music, the flow of the music. The studio where Red Wing was on was just a little ways off a highway. I was living in the Duluth area, and I'd have to drive about 45 minutes, and that's the pretty area of Highway 23. I used to, you know, and in the same time when I was recording this album, I drove Highway 23 to South Dakota, I think 4 weekends in a row to go to gigs. And part of Highway 23 was somewhat dangerous to drive because it was fairly narrow. And, you know, I don't want to say boring, but there are parts of it that is not as pretty. And the fastest way from Duluth is to take 35W. But to get to the studio, I had what is called Scenic 23 from about Hinckley to Duluth. It's not quite Hinckley, but I can't think of the town. But you get off and you drive. So it's a very pretty drive. It's a very wooded area, hilly. You see some lakes along the way, and it's a very charming part. So I think in the process, as I started recording this, I was, you know, which was really odd about that piece, which I haven't heard in a long time. I know it has a dulcimer part, but I also have this guitar. And I call it a 5-string guitar because I took off a string that was kind of in the way to record it, and it has a really bouncy little thing. I don't get, and there might be a jaw harp if you listen closely. I'm just trying to recall what's all in that on that tune. A lot of these a tune like Highway 23, I never performed that. You know, I could go back and listen to it and do it some facsimile where. We listen to Running Water. I often perform that, just the mandolin part.
Mm-hmm. So when you are creating a song, is it similar to the writing experience? I mean, do you edit the song, whittle it down, that sort of thing?
For this version, yeah, especially, you know, I would say maybe about a third of what I do. You know, you go in and then kind of get finalized, get finalized in that studio, or one form. I've often, you know, once I've recorded something, actually through the process of replaying it, you know, 100 times, I might, and it usually shortens. I usually don't lengthen things, but I usually shorten them just, I don't want to say audience attention spans, but you know, maybe I've said what needs to be said. You know, there's also times where you add attention by restating and restating and restating and restating
until somebody gets it.
You know, until they say okay, and then there's that relief when that something new happens or something different. I mean, that's Philip Glass has made a living by doing that.
So back to this notion of when you decided to become an artist, I'm curious as to what were you thinking about your future as an artist at that time.
You don't quite know where you're going to end up. And I don't know if it was, I do remember a time when I was trying to discern, do I want to do this? And I thought, I'm going to do this for 5 years and see what it feels like.
Were you single at the time?
I was single at the time. I was single, you know, I was probably walking around St. John's. And there are ups and downs in any career. And, you know, musicians, you know, you, you you try to get feedback. You're trying to get feedback from the audience. You're trying to get work. You're trying to get paying work, and you're trying to develop a voice. I mean, there's so many elements that occur for young artists, which, you know, you don't want to rush. You want to kind of enjoy, if that's possible. When you play music, it is possible. And then when you play for people, you know, hopefully it's very possible. There's so many different approaches. I mean, I can only speak from my approach, but I've learned a lot. I think I'm developing my voice. It's becoming more mature, and it's about time, because, you know, I hope to do this another 10 or 15, but I don't have that guarantee. So I'll have to be satisfied with what comes out.
We're talking to musician Paul Imholt, and Paul, in going through your music catalog, I came across a song on your 1996 release, Halfway to Canada, and the name of the song is What Would Be So Bad If Women Would Be Priests? And I found the subject matter particularly appropriate, or should I say still appropriate, after all these years. So let's give our audience a listen to this song, and we'll talk about it afterwards. What Would Be So Bad If Women Would Be Priests, by Paul Imholt.
What would be so bad if women would be priests? Would it be a sin if we let a woman in? We owe it to our daughters to question it at least. What would be so bad if women would be priests? I've always been Catholic. Catholic I'll stay, to church once a week and twice on the holy day. When I'm on my knees, I hear sweet Mary say, what would be so bad if women would be priests? Would her son frown if men would share their gowns? Would the saints have a fit if we change just that bit? Would it be so terrible to begin a new parable? What would be so bad if women would be priests? Oh, what would be so bad if women would be priests? Would it be a sin if we let a woman in? We owe it to our daughters to question it at least. Oh, what would be so bad if women would be priests?
So, Paul, what inspired you to write this song?
I wasn't planning to record it. I mean, this song was, you know, 20 years old or older. I wrote it for some of my friends who were theology majors at the College of St. Benedict's. Or I wrote it, you know, in conversation, not in conversation, but, you know, we talked. We said, you know, there's a glass ceiling if you have a theology major and are a woman in the Catholic Church. But I wasn't planning to record it until the Pope said clerical and people in administration cannot talk about this issue. I thought, well, I'm just a lowly folk singer. Folk singers are supposed to talk about issues that are about people and that are oppressing people. So that's why I included it on this album.
Did you ever get any interesting responses to that song from audiences?
I don't perform it very often now, and I never played it every gig that I played. You know, I certainly have people disagree with that, and some people agree with it. So, and that's okay.
We're talking to musician Paul Imholt, and Paul, I know that you're involved with the Granite City Folk Society, which is a organization here in St. Cloud that helps to bring a lot of great folk music to our area. Tell me about that organization and your role in it.
I've been involved for about the last 4 years, and we've actually presented house concerts at our house as part of the Granite City Folk Society. We do quite a few at the Pioneer Place, too. So we kind of branch out depending upon what rooms are available and what the act will draw in. You know, we had some great folk acts like David Bromberg or Greg Brown or Chris Smither, Peter Yarrow within the last about 3 years.
How did you get involved in that, and how much time out of your week or your month does it take to help run that?
I knew the people, you know, the way I got involved is we actually, the Folk Society came into some problems with publishing rights, publishers almost shutting down the concert series because they, you know, you pay rights, and there was a certain publisher we were not paying, and we came to an agreement we wouldn't pay them, but the concert series closed down, and then I got a call from the president of the Folk Society and said, "Hey, would you be interested in having Claudia Schmidt do a house concert in your house?" And kind of reviving. So it actually started back up doing house concerts, and then joined the board, and we have reformed the board. We've really done a lot of work. We have a really good board right now, where the labor is divided up, but we are a volunteer working board. Everybody has a responsibility to do, like promoting concerts, website design. Mine is kind of, you know, overall view, but.
And the whole purpose of the Granite City Folk Society is to bring folk musicians to play live in the area. Is that correct?
I'm glad you said it, because I've just been assuming that everybody knows our mission. But that is exactly it, to present live folk music in St. Cloud at fairly reasonable prices. Large folk acts. You know, folk acts are not, you know, like Bruce Springsteen, but large acts
David Bromberg.
David, you know, large acts and regional acts, and then also local acts. And we also do things with high school students to get them up on stage performing. And it's been very fulfilling to see that happen.
So where and how do you typically perform your music?
I either do stage shows or I do acoustical music on the grounds. And an example at the Lemonade Art Fair in St. Cloud, I've been fortunate to be hired by that fest probably, you know, the last 14 years or in the row. And I just kind of, I have a cart full of instruments that I roll around the grounds and play acoustically. Because I think it's great that audiences can hear acoustic music, come up close, talk, and engage. And that's actually I'm thrilled by that type of performance.
You're known as the string man. You play a dozen stringed instruments. The hammered dulcimer seems to be the one that you play the most. It has a beautiful, soothing sound. What's it like to play that thing?
I get this comment that it's, you know, very soothing and very peaceful. That's not my concept, because I'm sitting there smacking the bugger.
You're working.
You know, I'm hitting it, and it's like I'm drumming, but it gives you this kind of very harp-like. But I think it's more juvenile than a harp. I think because of the snap of the string there, and I can get different effects out of it. So, and physically, you know, often when I play a festival, this is kind of an odd day I play 6 hours at a time, but it's very casual. People come and talk to me, and I talk. But as I pull it, it's a large muscle movement playing the hammered dulcimer, whereas playing a guitar or playing the violin, your arms up higher. Playing the guitar, it's a smaller muscle movement, or smaller your finger, much, and so there's more tension, I think, in hands. So it's good to play different instruments that you exercise different muscles and free up different muscles and let them relax as you play something else, or stop and talk to the audience.
You've been playing these stringed instruments for quite a long time. I was wondering as to how your body's reacting to it at this point in your life.
I'm starting to feel some aches and pain. You know, when I play a long day, typically I will do, you know, a couple long days, like a Saturday, Sunday. I'm not usually feel worse, though, on Sunday. You know, it's like I've opened up on Saturday and
got loosened up.
Yeah, but I can, you know, I'm starting to, you know, in my shoulders, like most people my age, which is in mid to late 50s, you know, shoulder, you can start to feel shoulder strain, but I've been I think that's by playing different instruments has mm-hmm. allowed me to play, do a gig that's 6 hours. But that's not all playing. I mean, a lot of it is interacting to audiences in different ways and trying to find out the people's stories, because it's a very casual, very personal way of performing.
Tell me a little bit about your group, the Tarvies.
2011, we released Barn Raising Day, which is kind of a tribute to the Midwest, to Minnesota, Wisconsin. It features Carrie Oberg, who has this beautiful voice, and I work with her in Ring of Carrie, so it was just kind of natural to bring her in. And she lives on a small farm, or lives next to a small farm, raised on a farm in Wisconsin. Also, we John Ely played dobro, and there are other musicians, but I kind of think we are the, they are, Carrie, John, and I are the core of the Tarvies. So just this year, just a couple of weeks ago, I released an album of children's songs. It's kind of silly. It's kind of fun. It's called Old MacDonald Had a Banjo. The title cut is the only place, I think, in the universe where you're going to find a banjo, a penny whistle, a dobro, a accordion, a tuba, a bagpipe, electric guitar, and an orchestra all in one song.
She's got everything she needs. She's an artist. She don't look back. She's got everything she needs. She's an artist. She don't look back.
I'd like to thank musician Paul Imholt for coming into the studio today. For more information, go to his website at paulimholt.com. Let's close out this session of The Artist Speaks with the title track from Barn Raising Day.
Driving Grandpa to awake of one of his old farming friends, he stared out the window to see how the crops grow and rise from the sweet earth again. We slowed for a bend in the road. There stood an empty homestead. A smile lit his face as he looked at the place, nodded, he simply said, "Here stands a beautiful barn, home for the Holstein, the horses, the hay, 40 feet high, ground to the sky, beautiful barn raising day." Grandpa told me how it was built, how mortise and tenon were wed, how pulleys and ropes kept the rafters afloat carefully overhead. 'Twas a crew of 85 men working together in teams, follow the orders of elders and joiners to fashion the girder and beams. Here stands a beautiful barn, home for the Holstein, the horses, the hay, 40 feet high, ground to the sky, beautiful barn raising day. Everyone there had a job. Boys ran for water and tools. Girls cared for toddlers and helped their mothers prepare the bountiful food. They finished just after dark. There in the full moon's charm, a cathedral of wood, proudly it stood, the heart of a family farm. Here stands a beautiful barn, home for the Holstein, the horses, the hay, 40 feet high, brown to the sky, beautiful barn raising day. In the church parking lot, he wiped a tear from his eye. Another day passing, never returning, here for a final goodbye. Dear friends, like the shelter of barns, though they grow weathered and old, store up a treasure, measure for measure, in all the love that we hold. here stands a beautiful barn, home for the Holstein, the horses, the hay. 40 feet high, ground to the sky, beautiful barn raising day. Here stands a beautiful barn, home for the Holstein, the horses, the hay.